we are holding on the top line of Gimel Amud Aleph. So we learned yesterday that when the Mishnah says, because it always starts on Beis, when we learned yesterday that the Mishnah says that that two people who jointly own a chaser and decide to divide it, we said they want to make a mechitza. We said yesterday we discussed the one possibility that mechitza means a wall, and then the implications.
Initially.
Now we're going to go Lishna Achrina, version number two of the discussion. Amriwa is, they say as follows, Tavarua, they start with the assumption, my mechitza plugda, that the word mechitza in our Mishnah may mean a division. Not a wall, but just that they want to divide it. And we know mechitza can...
Meaning what, a line?
Well, we said yesterday, if we learn the Mishnah to say that they agreed to build a wall, then they build a wall, the point is, but if they didn't agree to build a wall, one of them can't force the other one to do it. One of them does not have the ability to argue hazakriya.
Right. Wow.
On the other hand, because that's what we argued yesterday. On the other hand, now we're going to say it the other way. Now we're going to say maybe that once they agree to split the chaser, then either one can force the other one to build the wall because hazakriya. So that's going to be the way we look at it. And how do we see that mechitza can... That one person causes harm to the other by looking at him while he's trying to do private things in the chaser. The my mechitza plugta means a division. Dichtiv, as you have it in the pasuk, vasi mechtas ha'eda. The division that was given, the half of the spoils that were given to the congregation of the Jewish people was X amount. So we see that mechitza can mean a division. And by the way, Tosfos points out earlier that usually when the Gemara introduces something with svarua, usually it means this is a svara, but it doesn't end up being that way lamaskana. Here it is going to be that way, Lamachgana. Here it is going to. However, since it's more than a Svara. However, first of all, Tosafot says, okay, sometimes the Gemara does introduce the Svarura, and it ends up being the Lamachgana as well. But second of all, since we had the first version yesterday, right at the beginning of the Gemara, we're going to have later. Since we started out with Svarua, with version number one, which the Halacha doesn't end up being like this, then therefore for parallelism, we start the second one with Svarua as well. Okay. So if we learn the Mishnah that way, the Kivin Derotzu, then the implication is that once they agreed to divide it, and then either one of them can force the other one to build an actual wall of stones.
In other words, we agree that it's going to be divided.
We agree it's going to be divided, and therefore automatically one of them can say to the other, if we don't put a wall, there's going to be hezekria. I want to do private things in the chaser, and you're going to be interfering, therefore you have to agree with me to build a wall.
But you can just like what?
Yeah, but that's what we said yesterday, that's not a valid claim. I can still say it's too much of a hassle for me. As a matter of fact, actually, it's interesting. The Rif talks about in one of his Trubas, the other Rishonim talk about it, pro and con. What about, for example, let's say they split the chatzar and didn't make a wall. Can one of them at some later date come and say, you know what, after all, there was hezekriya, I changed my mind, we need to have a wall. Or maybe not. The Rif says that, yes, he can. He has the ability to say that. Hezekriya is not one of those things that you say once the other guy has a chazaka on it, then he can continue with it. No, we say that the first guy can always object and say, and always has the ability to object later and say, you know what, I decided I can't hack it, we need a wall.
And that's because from the beginning,
because we're going to have, for example, later in the Masechta, towards the end of the third parak, for example, we're going to be talking about cases where there's something that ordinarily one neighbor wouldn't be allowed to do in a joint chatzah, let's say, but if the other one agreed, even if they didn't make a kinyan on it, but he let it happen, then that's it. The guy is a chazaka, and the first neighbor doesn't have the ability to complain. But there are certain things that are exceptions to that, certain things which are a constant, ongoing irritant, and therefore he has the ability at some later point to say, you know what, I thought I could hack it, I realize after all I can't. Hezekriya, the Rish says, is one of them. Okay. Yeah. So, Alma Hezekriya Shmei Hezek. So you see, if you learn the Mishnah that way, that Hezekriya is a real Hezek, and therefore he can force the other guy to build the wall. Okay, now the question is, why don't we assume, like we said yesterday, Eima Mai Mechitza Guda, why don't you argue that the word Mechitza maybe means a wall? The case we had yesterday, we had the wall between the vineyard and the grain field, and it collapsed, part of it collapsed, so the owner of the field tells the owner of the vines, fence it in, because otherwise my wheat is going to become osser because of your vines.
If they're near
each other, we said yesterday, you have a wall, and one guy has his vines close to the wall on this side, and the other has his wheat close to the wall on this side, that's allowed as long as there's a wall, but if the wall breaks down, you're going to have Kalayim. If it's going to have Kalayim, you're going to have Kalayim Kedem, and it's going to be awesome.
They're both good.
Yeah. And we see it uses over there the word Mechitza. Nifritza, if it breaks down again, Omelogdor, again, the guy tells him, fence it in. Nithyayashemen of Legodra, if he gives up, if he does Yush, and doesn't, if he gives up hope, of that a vine can't be bothered to fix it and doesn't fix it, how is a kiddush, then it causes the grain and also the vine for that matter to be also a chayev achriyosa. And the owner of the vine is chayev for the nezek that was caused for the fact that the other guy's grain became also. We learned this yesterday. We went Kalayim. Yeah, we went into the details of this yesterday. We're just bringing it again because yesterday we used that as the first assumption that the Mishnah, that the chitza of our Mishnah means a wall on the basis of that braisa. Now we're trying the other possibility that it means plugta, division. So we're asking why would we understand the Mishnah that way when we could understand it instead to mean a wall. And if we understand it that way, the time of the Ratsu, only if they voluntarily agreed, both of them, to build a wall, then one of them can say to the other, well, we got to build the wall. But if they never agreed to build a wall, if you learn it that way, then it would mean you can't be Mechayev one to the other. Then one can't be Mechayev the other to build a full-fledged wall. And the Sippus, maybe, like we said yesterday, just some kind of division, but no more than that. Why don't you understand the Mishnah that? Alma Hezekri, Elav Shmei Hezek. If we learn the Mishnah that way, it means that Hezekri is not considered a real Hezek. Why don't you learn it that way? The answer is because, Ihochi, what do you mean, burning a sakosol? This is the same question that we brought up yesterday. If so, then the wording of the Mishnah is not really so precise. The Mishnah starts off, Hashutkin should also last as mechitza b'chatzer, so they wanted to make a mechitza, burning a sakosol b'emtza, they build the wall in the middle. If mechitza means a wall, what do you mean, burning a sakosol? Why does it have to say the word kosol? Burning oisei m'borilei, let it just say they build it. The fact that oisei, whatever, yeah. So therefore, on that basis, it seems more logical to say that mechitza and kosel are two different things rather than to say that mechitza is another word for kosel. So now yesterday, when the Gemara brought up, that question, we said, no, because if it only said bone and osa, you would think all you need is a mesipas. Maybe you only need like a row of pegs in the ground or like Tosfos said, a wall with a lot of holes and windows in it.
What do you mean?
Now,
inclusively.
Right. Burning as a kosel implies a full-fledged wall. Okay. Over here, the Gemara is not taking that view, and the Chassam Sofer explains the reason is because our Gemara over here is taking the view that, based on what something that Reb Nachman says, which we'll have in a few days on Vav Amud Beis, that Reb Nachman says that any time two people split a chater, automatically, it's a given they have to put up a mesipas, because you have to make sure one of them has since now each one has their own part of it, they're not owning it jointly anymore, you have to have something in the middle over there so that you'll have called nipasola kaganev. If the other guy trespasses on his property, it'll be obvious that he's there illegally. He won't have the ability to say, well, I didn't realize where the dividing line is. So therefore, it's a given that you need that. Therefore, we can't understand that. Therefore, there's no reason to understand that our Mishnah would be saying that all you need is a Mesipas, because we would already know that from Reb Nachman's game, which itself is implied later in a Mishnah later in our Perek. That you need a Mesipas. That the fact that the Mishnah is
again,
a Mesipas is either like Rashi says, just a row of pegs or something in the ground to mark the boundary, or according to Tosfos, a wall with a lot of holes in it, holes and windows. Because that would be enough to show whose part is whose. And that's enough to avoid, that's enough for the purpose of nitbasol of Kaganam. That's enough for the purpose that if the other guy is trespassing, it'll be obvious that he is. What are you doing over here? As opposed to...
They agreed on a mechitza, so...
No. What we're saying is, if we understand the Mishnah to say... Again, yesterday we argued like this. If the Mishnah... the reason why the Mishnah didn't need to use the word kosel is to say, even though to begin with they agreed to build a wall, don't think that maybe they can get away with the mesipas, they need a full-fledged wall.
Right.
However, if they never agreed to build a wall, they could get away with mesipas. Now, our Gemara doesn't want to use that, our Lashon and the Gemara doesn't want to use that explanation because we already know that they need a mesipas from elsewhere, from a Mishnah later in our Perek, the way that Reb Nachman understands it. The fact that the Mishnah says "bonin es hakosel" must imply that it means the Mishnah is actually coming to tell us you need a wall, not just a mesipas. And why would that be the case? Must be because the Mishnah is trying to tell us the chiddush that they only agreed to begin with to split the chatzer. So they never said anything about building anything at all. But once they said to split it, because Hezekiah, automatically that means they got to build a wall. And therefore, that's why our Gemara.
Hezekiah,
that one is going to watch, one is going to be able to look over at the other one while he's trying to do private things in the chatzer. Okay, the Gemara asks,
So if we said burning.
So that's the thing. The Gemara is saying over here, the reason why we don't want to assume that mechitza means a war and then say kosel also means a war is because then the Mishnah is repeating itself needlessly. You're going to say, like yesterday, that we need it in order to tell us that a mesipas is not enough. We know a mesipas is not enough from later in the parak. Therefore, we can't understand the Mishnah that way. We must understand the Mishnah, therefore, more logically to say that it means once they're deciding to divide the chaser without any reference to walls, automatically, because Hezekiah is a real thing, therefore one of them can force the other one to build a wall. So, Elamai Pogta. So what are you going to say then in that case? You're left with saying that the word Mechitza in our Mishnah means a division. Then we have the question that we mentioned yesterday. Then why does the Mishnah use the expression that they wanted to make Mechitza, which implies an actual thing that they make? They should use the verb. They wanted to divide it. The answer is that's not such a big problem. Because it could just be the way people talk. People say, it's an expression. People say, come, let's make a division. Not necessarily when people start talking about making something, does it mean something actually tangible? It could mean that we'll divide it. Yeah, it's another way of saying it. Yeah. Fine. Now, so if we learn the Mishnah that way, then what is the Mishnah telling us? So then let's review what the Mishnah is saying. It's saying like this: Hashutfen sherotzu lasas mechitza b'chatzer. These are partners who voluntarily agreed to split their chatzer. Once they voluntarily agreed to split it, then automatically that triggers that one or the other of them can say, Hezekiah, we need to build a wall. The problem with that is, Hezekiah Shmei Hezek, if you're going to tell me that Hezekiah is considered a Hezek, and therefore a wall has to be built, my area rotten. So why does the Mishnah need to specifically mention the case where they both agreed to split the chaser? After the load of tsunami. And if they didn't want, and if they didn't agree to split the chaser in the first place, Later on in the perek, we're going to learn that we touched on this briefly yesterday. Once a chotzer or any other joint property is a certain minimum size, then one of them has the ability to unilaterally divide it. He can say, "I want to divide it," and you have to go along with it. We'll learn later in the perek. There are nuances in this. There's something called good or good. Maybe one of them can agree to buy out the other ones. But whatever. Let's not get into that right now. We'll deal with that later on. Dr. Gibble. But for the time being, the point is, a chaser, for example, the minimum size that is considered to be a usable chaser is 4x4 amos. If a chaser is 8x4, which means that once you split it, there'll be 4x4 for each one, all that you need, you don't even need both of them to agree to split the chaser. All you need is one of them to say, I want to split the chaser, and the other one automatically has to go along with it. And based on
that's
what we're saying,
that's from the
depth. And based on what our Mishnah is saying, if we understand our Mishnah to be saying Hezek Riyah Shmei Hezek, then it means that also that drags along with it the fact that he can force him to build a wall. So then in that case, why is the Mishnah starting off by telling us that they voluntarily agreed to split the chaser when it could have just as well said a case where they didn't voluntarily agree? And it would be a bigger chiddush. It's all coming from me. I'm the one who said Hezekiah. I'm the one who said I don't want to be a joint. I don't want to own the chaser jointly with you anymore. I want to split it. And you didn't even agree to that. And nevertheless, you end up having to share with me and
maybe
building the wall.
If we say Ratsu, it means more than a wall. It could be something else.
We're saying that Ratsu means just to split the chaser.
Right.
Amar Rav Asi. Amar Rav Yechanan, Mishnah Seinuch Shein Badin Chalukah. So Rav Asi says, in the name of Rav Yechanan, the answer is that our Mishnah is talking about when the chaser is too small to trigger that din. Too small for either of them to divide it unilaterally. In other words, there'll be less than 4x4 for each one. The whole chaser is less than 8x4. So therefore, the only way that it can be divided is if they both agree. They are allowed to. Only then if they agree. Well, so the question is, my kamash malon. So what is, in that case, what are you going to say that the Mishnah wants to inform us? That even if it's not big enough to be considered something that could be split, they still can voluntarily split it. Tanena. Not so much that it's obvious. Well, there's a few different ways of explaining what the question is. One of them is that the Mishnah doesn't have to tell us if they want to split it, they can split it. It's not like anybody else can prevent them. But the other possibility is, if we say that Hezek Riyah Shmei Hezek, then yes, there is no logical difference between whether one of them says, I want to split it, where it's big enough to split, and therefore that triggers the building of a wall, or where they both agree to split it, and then also there's no reason to mention one versus the other.
Well, you can't seem clear, but the one guy says, like, let's split it, but I don't want to build a wall, because it's such a small property, you can't force the other guy, can't force
it. No, if the one who said, I want to split the property, if the one who says, I want to split the property, and we're talking about it's too small to be din chalukah,
right.
It's too small to be for him to force the other one to split, both of them have to agree to it. Once both of them agree to split it, either one of them is able to claim Hezekiah and say, we got to build a wall.
Even if it's a small property.
Even if, yeah. So, what are you telling me? Tanena, we learn later on in our Perek. Amasai, when do these dinim apply? Bizmancha and Shneim Reitzim, only if both of them don't agree. Abel Bizmancha Shneim Reitzim, but if both of them agree, Afilapachas Mekan Chokin, then they can split it even if it's smaller than that. So then in that case, then what's our Mishnah telling us? What's the Chiddush? The answer is, Ime Hossam, yes, but if we only had that Mishnah, Habamina Afilapachas Mekan Vemesipis Ba'alma. You would think, what does the Mishnah mean? If you only had that later Mishnah about that Bizman Sherotu, you would think what it means is like this. When you have a chotzer that's too small to have din chalukah, yes, two things happen. Number one, they both have to agree. Fine, we know that from that Mishnah. Number two, even once they both agree, all one of them can force the other one to do is to put up a mesipas just for nifas ala kaganev, just to prevent the other guy from trespassing. Not an actual war.
For a wall,
Kamash Malan, that is Kamash Malan Hocha, that is the Chiddush of our Mishnah, Koisel, that it mentions the actual word, a wall. Yeah.
Even if it's a small property.
Even if it's a small property, you still need a wall. Yeah.
Okay.
But then the question is, V'lisni Havale, listen Hach. In that case, then we know everything from our Mishnah, ultimately. From our Mishnah, we infer from the wording of our Mishnah, that Shadrotu, that it has to be a chotzer that's small enough that they have to both agree to divide it.
Right.
Our Mishnah also says the point about Kosel, meaning not a Masipas. So everything that we know from our Mishnah. What's the point of the Mishnah later on Daf Yud Aleph, which is repeating that, that information?
What's the point of the Mishnah on Yud Aleph?
On Yud Aleph. On Daf Yud Aleph. The second Mishnah. It's not the second, but whatever. A later Mishnah in our Perek, which says that when it doesn't have Din Chalukah, they can still agree to split it. And in that case, then we're saying they have to build something, but we know all that from our Mishnah. The answer is Sefer, Tzrichalei. You're right. The first part of that Mishnah is not really necessary, according to this way of looking at it. That first part of the Mishnah is meant only as an introduction to the next part, which teaches us that there's a certain exception to this din about splitting something. In general, we're saying if two people own something jointly, they're able to split it. If it's large enough, then one of them can force the other one to split it. And if it's not large enough, then they can both mutually agree to split it. However, there is one exception, the Kisver Kodesh, where it says over there, that Sforim of Tanakh, Afafisha Shneim Reitzim, even if both of them agree to split it, Yot Lo Yachloku, they should not divide it. Because it would be a bizayin to the Sefer Torah or Sefer of Nevi'im or what have you to cut it in the middle so each one of them can have half.
Isn't that obvious?
No, it wouldn't be so obvious. We're going to learn actually later.
You can rip them apart.
What kind of rip them apart? But we could also be talking about, for example, what if you have several of them in one volume? Remember, in those days, everything was written like a Sefer Torah as a scroll. Imagine, for example, two people, let's say, inherited jointly a Sefer Torah from their father. Maybe not a Sefer Torah is not a good example. Fine, because the Kedusha of a Sefer Torah is higher than the Kedusha of individual Chumashim. Fine. But let's say, for example, they inherited a scroll that contains all 8 books of Nevi'im. Yeshua, Shoftim, Shmuel, Malachim, etc. Later on, one of them says, you know what, I'm really more interested in Nevi'im Rishonim, and the other one says, I'm more interested in Nevi'im Achronim. Let's split it. The Mishnah is saying, don't do that. Because they were all written together, and it would be a bizarre to cut it apart. We'll see actually later on. We'll see. We're going to have a whole sugya later on about the dinim of this. We're going to see it's not so simple. Sometimes they actually can. But the point is,
Mishnah, we're talking all along about the chatzer.
No, but that Mishnah, that Mishnah later on is saying more generally, any kind of joint property, there's a certain minimum size. A chatzer, for example, the amount is 4x4 amos. In the case of, for example, we'll talk about in the case of a garden, in the case of a house, etc., each one of them has a certain minimum size where below that size, it can't really be considered the same object anymore. So above that size, it has a din chalukah. Below that size, it does not. So therefore,
no,
that's the point. In other words, that we're saying that kisvah kodesh, alpha pishah shneim roitzim, lo yachloiku. Even if both of them agree, they shouldn't divide it. With the details that we'll see over there. But the point is that they may agree, but still, it's not nice to do that to a sefer to cut it into two parts like that. We'll see the details about that later in the parak. Right now, we're just mentioning, according to this way of looking at it, that the only reason the Mishnah begins by mentioning the case of the chotzer is only as an introduction to other cases such as that. But not to say it's true. The din of the chotzer we would already know completely from our Mishnah. Lishnachrin, the Gemara says, here's another version of this whole last part of the discussion. Different achronim argue what exactly is going to be what exactly should be here. Some of them take out the whole part from here until the end of the parenthesis, 10 lines down. Some of them say it's only the first line of it that shouldn't be there. Some of it say some of them say all of it. Okay. Anyway, Loshen Acher, V'chi Rotsu Mai Havi. Another version of the question is: so what if they agreed? So what if they agreed to divide up the chotzer? Lahadrabe, why shouldn't they be able to change their mind? Rashi learns that the question is according to both versions of the Gemara. Whether we say that to begin with they agreed to make a wall, or whether we say that they all agree they agreed to begin with it to split the chotzer, either way, there was no binding agreement here.
You cannot change your mind. But why ever not?
Tosfos learns differently. Tosfos learns the question is only according to the second Lashon. The first Lashon, fine, once we agreed there's going to be a wall built, meaning, in other words, that one of them is saying to the other, I'm going to pay X amount of money towards it, sure, that's not something you can easily renege on. Okay. So, Amar Ravasi, Amar Bechan, and Bishkonim Yadich. So the details of that, we're going to have in a few lines after the parenthesis, is that Ravasi answers the name of Bechan, and we're talking about they made an actual Kenyan. We'll deal later on
what?
A Kenyan, that there's going to be a wall built or that's going to be split, as the case may be. We'll deal soon with the question, what good does such a Kenyan do? We'll get back to that. Wait. Okay. Now, though, another part of the question is, instead of the Mishnah talking about a case where the chotzer is too small for one of them to be able to force a division, and we're saying only if they both agree to divide it, only then do they have to build a wall, why doesn't the Mishnah instead talk about a case where it's large enough to be unilaterally divided? It doesn't even require rotzu. And therefore, even if they don't agree, both agree to divide it, they still not only have to divide it, but have to build a wall. It's another way of putting the question from before. Instead of saying shirotu lasis mechitza, that they wanted to divide the chotzer, meaning that they both agreed to it, which in that case requires us to say that we're talking about a small chotzer, why don't we just say that it's talking about a normal large chotzer. Only one of them says, I want to split it. The other one has to go along with that. And once that happens, the other one also has to go along with building a wall because it has a kriya.
We would have drawn the same conclusions.
Yeah. The answer is, Iyashmin and B'sheyeshba din chalukah v'afagav delei rotzu, because if we were only told the case where the chotzer is large and we were saying that this works even if both of them don't agree, havamin sheein b'din chalukah afilu rotzu namiloy, you would think, okay, then that applies to a large chotzer, you have to build a wall. But maybe in a small chotzer, even if they both agreed to divide it, maybe a wall is not necessary. Maybe in a small chotzer, it's not so necessary to have a wall. Kamash Malan, and that would be why the Mishnah has to tell us the case of the small chotzer. Yeah. Okay, the question is, Mimotis Amritachi, but how could you think to say like that? That conceivably you could argue that the Mishnah might have implied that in the case of a small chotzer, you don't need a wall, and therefore the Mishnah had to explicitly tell us not. Rakatani Sefer, but the Mishnah continues. Amosai, late in Sefer, meaning later on in our parak. Amosai b'zman she'shneim roitzim. When is this talking about only if both of them don't agree? Abu b'zman she'shneim roitzim, but if both of them agree to split the chotzer, even if it's small, yachloku, then they can go ahead and divide it. And again, the point of that Mishnah can't just be to tell us they divide it. Of course they can divide it. It must be the Mishnah is telling us that they have to divide it with a wall. So we know it already from that Mishnah. My lava koisel. L'chura, doesn't the word yachloiku over there have to mean with an actual wall? And then it says, loy, I'm a sipis ba'alma. No, it could just mean that they have to put up a mesipis. It's only from our Mishnah that you would know that you have to put up a wall. Okay. Then again, the question is, like we asked before in the first version, listeni hai v'lo listeni hai. Fine, again, then let it just say our Mishnah, which clearly says they build a wall. We don't need that later Mishnah at all. And again, the answer is like before, sefer etzrichale, that first part of the Mishnah is only meant as an introduction to the last part, that when it comes to Sfarim, the din is different than it is with the Chatzar.
So are we saying, really, that we need the din of the Sefer Torah to get to the din of the chatzer?
No, we're saying that sometimes it's a very common thing that the Mishnah will tell us a din which we already know from someplace else as an introduction to another din to tell us, even though it's true with a chatzer that such and such, however with the Sefer Torah it's not like that. It's a very common way in Mishnayos and Gemara. Also, sometimes we have the Gemara will start off a discussion by saying pshita, it's obvious that something
in this case,
but what is the din in a related case? It's a common kind of thing. Okay. Anyway, the Maharam has a long discussion about this part in parenthesis. Is it actually just saying what it said in the Gemara before in a different way, or is it actually even asking a different question? Is it actually coming at the thing from a different angle? Whatever it is,
it seems to be we couldn't have concluded it was the Sefer Torah, the Dean of the Sefer Torah, without knowing before the din of the chatzer, it seems this way.
In a way, which is why we have that din of the chatzer as an introduction. No, what the Gemara was asking was that we have our Mishnah that says Hashutkin Shirotu Lasu Mechitza Bonin as a Kosa Banta. We did not need later on the Mishnah to tell us that if the chatzer is smaller than 8 by 4 amos, then only if they both agree do they have to divide it. Because divide it implies that they need a wall, and we know that already from our Mishnah. And the answer is yes, that Mishnah is only telling us as an introduction to other cases where it talks about over there where you have other things that each have a minimum size and on the other hand with Kisra Kodesh there is no minimum and no maximum size. You can never split them again with the exception
of
double
this introduction.
We needed that introduction, yes. It's a standard way for the Mishnah to do things. Okay. Fine. But Mayo Kibdala Masnissin, fine. So what are we saying then? How are we shtelling ayin our Mishnah? We're saying that our Mishnah is saying, ultimately, b'she'en b'din chalukah. We're saying that our Mishnah is talking about a chatzer, which in and of itself is not large enough to be split up, so they both have to agree in order for it to even be split, let alone to build a wall. Well, b'she'en b'din chalukah, then we're back to the question, which we had in the parenthesis. So if there's no din chalukah, ki rotu my habi, so what if they both agreed to split it? Nehadrabahu, why can't they change their mind? Again, according to Rashi, the question is on both Lashonis, whether we say that to begin with they agreed to build a wall, or whether we say to begin with they only agreed to split the chatzer. According to Tosfos, the question is only on the second version. Amar Rav Asi, Amar Rav Yechonon, Shekonu Miyadam. Yes, but we're talking about a case where they made a kinyan. They actually made a kinyan sudr, and once they did that, then it's a binding agreement. Okay, the question is, so what?
They cannot change their mind. Yes. Is that what it means?
Generally, when people make an agreement and make a kinyan on it, it means it's irrevocable. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That's why before a wedding, for example, by tznoi, we make a kinyan, various other things. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
However, even if they made a kinyan, so what? What's so special about a kinyan in this case? Kinyan dvarim ba'almahu. Isn't it just a kinyan on words? Meaning, in other words, Rashi says, a kinyan can only be on something that ownership of it could be transferred, something that can be bought or sold, something that's given as a gift, some shibud on kalka, etc., on the talpun, etc. Even according to Rashi, many of the portions say, even according to Rashi, this part of the question can only go on the second version of the Gemara, that mechitza means
right.
A division.
Right.
All they're saying is, we're going to divide the chatzer. There's no actual tangible thing that's changing hands over here. According to the first version, they're going to build a wall. Fine, there's nothing tangible. I'm agreeing that I'm going to give X amount to the wall.
The
so once you make a kinyan, but on the second version, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. The Kenyan Dvarim Ba'almahu, yeah. The answer is B'shekonu Miyodin Beruchos. We're talking about that they made the Kenyan and said each of us is actually, they actually specified which side each of them is going to get. I'm going to get the east side, you're going to get the west side. So now there's an actual tangible object which is changing hands. We're not just saying, in other words, we're making a Kenyan that there's going to be a division over here, but we're not specifying what's what. We're actually specifying whose part is what.
And implying that
if we didn't specify that, their opinion is not valid for that, right? Rav Ashi Yama. Rav Ashi gives a different answer.
Therefore, they could change their mind.
And therefore, they can't change their mind.
No, since now we have this valid.
Right.
But
if they didn't do that, then they would be able to change their mind. Rav Ashi Yama. Kugon Shaholach Besev Shaloi Behesik. Rav Ashi says that we're talking about, let's say, one of them went and made a chazaka in his half. For example, a chazaka could be, Rashi gives an example, let's say he went and dug up the ground a little bit, which is a valid chazaka, as we'll learn later on in the third parak. Yes.
Pieces of wood.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah. Besev Shaloi Behesik. And the other one went and made a chazaka in his half. Now, Tosfos and a number of Mephoshim ask, what exactly is Rav Ashi adding? Is he trying to tell us that a chazaka is a valid kinyan? We don't need Rav Ashi to tell us that. We know that from many Mishnayos and Gemaras.
Well,
So there's a few different answers. Tosfos answers like this. There's a difference between when one person sells something or gives something or whatever to somebody else, and the other and the recipient is going to do a chazaka on it. We're going to learn later on in the third perek, in a couple of months from now, that Bez Hashem, that if it depends. If the chazaka is being done in the seller's or gifter's presence, then that's it. Nothing more is needed. But otherwise, if it's not being done in his presence, the person who sold or gave it to him has to explicitly tell him, Lech chazak ukni. Go make a chazaka on it, and thereby you will be kind of it. Now, over here, each one is
going...
If he's not present. Here, each one is going in his direction. And not necessarily when one of them goes and digs or whatever in his half of the chaser, not necessarily is the other one present to tell him Lech Chazak Ufni. Nevertheless, Rav Ashi is telling us it still works. Because once they did that, and Tosfos learns actually, even if they didn't actually make a kinyan, even if they didn't make a separate kinyan sudra on it, the fact that one of them goes and starts digging in his half after they mutually agreed, I'm going to get the east half, you're going to get the west half, automatically that itself constitutes a kinyan, and they don't even need a kinyan sudra.
But we didn't. Witnesses?
We didn't. No, you don't need.
No. We didn't need Rav Ashi.
No, but we do, because otherwise you would think that you need one to be present in front of the other one, or you need to tell them Lech Chazak Ufni. That's it.
Okay, but that's not clearly mentioned in the
But Bible. That's how Tosfos explains. There's a couple of other explanations. The Ramban gives an explanation that just, okay, Rav Ashi may not have heard of what Rav Yochanan said, so he came up with his own independent answer. Also, there's other possibilities they talk about that maybe, maybe Holach Zebesechel of the Hefzik, maybe it doesn't mean like Rashi that he actually dug in there, maybe it only means he walked around in there. And therefore, the point is, Rav Ashi is saying you need both. In order for, normally that doesn't constitute a valid kinyan by itself, because it was preceded by a kinyan sudr where they agreed, I'm going to take the east, you're going to take the west, then walking around in it is enough. And then and on top of that, you have a machlokas between the Rishonim, whether in that case, would they actually have to be, both of them would have to be present, or would it be good enough even if one of them does it not in the presence of the other? Okay. Right. Fine. So the maskana is that we accept the second version of the Gemara, that mechitza of our Mishnah means a division, not a wall. Once they agreed to divide it, or if it was a large enough chatzah they don't even need to agree, then a wall has to be built.
They both want.
If they both, as long as even one of them wants to build a wall, then they both have to agree.
Has to bear a kinyan.
Again, if the chatzah is too small to be required to divide, if there's no din chalukah in it, then in order for their agreement to divide it to be binding, there has to be a kinyan of the type that we talked about. Once that's done, then automatically everything else is triggered. Now, at that point, if one of them says, now that we divided the chatzah, I feel there's a problem of hezekriah, then they both have to agree, and then they both have to go and build the wall.
And if the chatzah is greater than...
If the chatzah is bigger than that, you don't even need all that. You don't need a kinyan, you don't need nothing. One of them says, I want to divide it. The other one has to go along with that, and everything else goes from there. Okay. The Mishnah continued, Mokam Shanagu Lubnas, call it. That in a place where the minhag is to build, we talk about four different types of building materials and sizes, then they build the wall accordingly. So let's define what are the terms that are used in our Mishnah. Gvil means avne deloy meshapia, means stones that are not hewn, that are not carved into shape. So they stick out on both sides. And therefore, it's wider. The Mishnah said it's such a wall, it's 6 tefachim thick.
They're just raw stones?
So again, you asked me that already a couple of times. I don't know if it means completely raw, like on all 6 sides, or if it just means that they're carved on 4 sides to fit into a wall, and they're just not carved on the inside and the outside. Yeah. I don't know. It could be either one. The Gemara is going to say soon, the reason why you need that extra tefach of thickness is because of the irregularity of the stone. That could be understood either way. Okay. Gozis means avni de meshapia. Gozis means stones that are hewn, that are cut and to size on all 6 sides. And we know that from the pasuk tichtiv, because it describes as far as the various building projects of Shlomo HaMelech, the Beit HaMikdash, his palace, etc. It says kol ela avonim yikaris kemidas gozis cholu. All of these buildings were made out of heavy stones according to the size of gozis. And the pasuk continues that by giving a definition of gozis, megoderus v'megeder mebayis mechutz. They were carved with, they were sawn with saws on the inside and on the outside. So we get to see that gozis is cut on all 6 sides. Kfisin means archi. The third material that we mentioned in our Mishnah is kfisin. That is half bricks, which, as we said when we learned the Mishnah, look, when we said we learned the Mishnah means you build one wall made out of half bricks, which are each a tefach and a half thick. Another wall near it, also a tefach and a half thick, and the tefach that in between them you fill up with cement or mortar or what have you, and therefore you have a 4 tefach wall thick total. And levainin means livni. Levainin, the last material of our Mishnah, means regular bricks that are 3 tefachim wide. Amalei Rabba Bredi Rava LaRavashi. How do you know that gvil means stones that are not cut completely to size, which would therefore mean that why do we have an extra tefach of thickness is because the irregular sides of it stick out. Dilma Pauga de Gozesu, maybe the definition of gvil is stones that are half the size of Gozes stones, the 2.5 tefachim thick. The high tefach yisera lebeni urihu. Maybe you build a Gozes wall the same way as we're saying you build a chrisim wall.
2.5.
Maybe what you do is you take a Gozes stone, which is 5 by 5, you cut it in half, so now you have 2.5 by 2.5. So you have 2.5 by 5, whatever, by 2.5 by 5. You make one wall of 2.5 thick over here, one wall of 2.5 thick over here, and fill up the middle with mortar.
Could be Gozes.
And that could be called Gozes, maybe. Kidakamin, Kfisin, Archi, Livnin, Livni. Just as we say that the difference between Kfisin and Levanin is that one is half bricks and one is whole bricks, the high tefach you say to Levanin, it would be, and the extra tefach of a Kfisin wall consists of the core of the wall, the mortar. Maybe by Gvil and Gozes, it's the same thing. Amalei, so Rav Ashi answers him, according to your own logic, Kfisin, Archi, Minolan, where do you know that Kfisin even means half bricks? Maybe Kfisin itself means larger bricks or something. In fact, Tosfos, by the way, on Bezim et Aleph, Tosfos points out there's a pasuk that uses the word kafis to mean something made out of wood. So Tosfos says, okay, maybe a Kfisin wall has wood beams on the top and bottom of it. But anyway, the point is, you don't have any way of knowing what Kfisin means either. Ela gemara gemini law. Well, how do you know what Kfisin means? Because you learned it that way from your rabbin. Same thing, the fact that gvil means uncut stones that are therefore 6 tefachim thick and there's no core of the wall, the whole wall is solid stone all the way through, is also something that we learned from Arabeim. Ikadamri, another version of this discussion, went like this. No, the conclusion is that gvil definitely means uncut stones. Yeah. Rather than stones cut in half and with mortar in between. But how do we know? We only know the Kabbalah from our teachers. We don't know. We don't have an explicit source for it. Ikadamri, another version. How do you know that the word kfisin means half bricks? We're again half brick, mortar, half brick. And therefore that the extra tefach is the mortar that's placed between the two halves of the wall. Maybe kfisin means bricks that are not fully cut in size. We learned at the end of Matthias, Rashi described the process of making bricks was you spread out a layer of mud on the ground, and then you scored lines in it the size of the bricks you need, and then eventually, once it hardened, you broke them apart. So conceivably, when you make them that way, the bricks aren't necessarily all the same size. Some of them might have pieces that stick out on the side. Maybe that's what kfisin means, a wall of rough bricks. And the extra tefach consists of the parts that stick out. Just as we're saying, the difference between grill and gozes is that one sticks out and the other one is cut to size. And the extra tefach is what sticks out. So how do you know that's not what kfisin means? And again, omalei, so again, Rav Ashi answers in, grill, abdi, lever, shapion, and all one. Again, according to your logic, so how do you think you know what grill means? We learned it from our Rebbeim that way. Good. Then when it comes to Kfisin also, each one we learned this way from our Rebbeim. This is how it is. Zil means uncut stones. Kfisin means half width. That's just how it is. Could very well be, by the way. I mean, the fact that Gemara is asking about it could be that they didn't use these terms in Bavel, and therefore the Amoraim weren't sure what they mean, you know. You couldn't just say, well, go ask the local builder what the word is for them. I'm going to buy it. Shma mina kobeni urbi tefach. You see from that then, from the fact that we're describing a kfisin wall as half brick, mortar, half brick, and that we're saying one tefach of mortar in between, you learn from that kobeni urbi tefach. Any time that you're building a wall that consists of a core with a facing on it, then the core has to be a tefach thick.
Urbi
means the rows, means the columns of bricks.
The columns of bricks.
Yeah, because nobody's arguing with them. So whenever you have something like that, whenever you're going to have a wall where the middle of it is mortar, or whatever material, and the sides of it are going to be stone or bricks or whatever, you always have to have a tefach in between. Which Rashi says, why do we need to know that?
Yeah.
If you're a contractor, if you agree with somebody else that you're going to build them a wall that has such a core, you need to be aware that you're not chayav per se, but otherwise the guy can argue that you haven't built the specification.
Right, you have to complete it.
Yeah. Okay. The Gemara says, Hani Mila Betina. Now, this that we're saying that you need a tefach is only if you're using tina, which there's a couple of different possibilities what tina means, but basically it means some kind of good quality cement. Yeah, Rashi doesn't translate it. Rabbeinu Gershom says that it's made of sand mixed with lime, so it holds together very well. Avol b'richsa. What if you're using richsa, which Rashi says richsa means like gravel mixed with mud. Rabbi Nagarishim explains that it means mud, basically plain old mud, dirt mixed with water. It doesn't hold together as well. Boitfei. Then you need more than one. You need more than one tefach for it to hold. The Ikadam, the others say the other way around. Hani mila b'richsa. When we say you need a tefach, is when you're talking about when you're using richsa, the weaker stuff. Al b'tinev, when you're using the good quality stuff, loy b'in kolahai, then you don't need a full tefach for that. Okay.
That's logical.
Either way you can look at it. Okay. Now, here's where we're going to talk about the Bismikosh. Lememra de begodis to call dalet amas goiva. Now let's consider, based on our Mishnah, it comes out that a wall that's made out of cut stones. Now we're saying the wall of our mission has to be 4 amas tall, because that's the point. If you're building a wall in order to avoid hezekriah, you need it to be taller than the average height of a person. The average height of a person is 4 amas. So are you telling me that when it comes to a wall of hewn stone, you call Dalet Amas Goiva, that for every 4 amas of height, you have a pus yachamsha, only if the width is 5 tefachim koi will the wall stand steady, eloi loi koi, and if not, if you build the wall any thinner, then it won't stand steady, because presumably that would be why the Mishnah is telling us you have to make it 5 tefachim thick. The question is, how could that be? V'ha amma traksin, what about the amma thick wall that's separated in the first space of Mikdash between the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim, which that wall, to have a gavoy tzlof in Amhasa, that wall was 30 amas tall, but I have a pussy elashis pushki, the width of it was only 6 tefachim, and it stood steady. The Gemara is assuming that it should have to be proportional. If a four amma high wall needs to be 5 tefachim thick, then 8 amas needs to be 10 tefachim, and so on and so forth. By the time you get to 30 amas, you're talking about a couple dozen tefachim thick, and here you see it only needs to be 6 tefachim thick. The answer is kiven de ikat tefachi stay or koi. Fine. But you're assuming it has to be proportional. It doesn't. Once you have the extra tefach of thickness, once it's 6 instead of 5, then it's much more stable and you can go to a much greater height. Like in modern construction, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be proportional. It's not necessarily the taller a building, then proportionately the walls have to be much thicker. You're able to build a taller building as long as the walls are a little bit are somewhat thicker than normal.
Yeah, but our material is much stronger.
Well, obviously, but the point still remains the same. 5 versus 6 fucking makes a big difference as far as stability. So therefore, it makes it that you're
up to
we'll see. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. On the days, we're going to talk about those other reasons. There was a roof on top of it, and therefore that helps stabilize it also. But still, we haven't gotten to that point yet. A couple of interesting things Tosfos talks about over here is, one, Tosfos asks, we see from our Mishnah that a wall of bricks can only be 3 tefachim thick, and it'll stand. Bricks are much weaker than stone. Why would we think that stone has to be 5 tefachim thick in order to be stable? Tosfos answers the difference is because when you build with stone, you expect it to last a very long time. A brick wall, you expect is going to last, 10, 20 years or whatever with the materials bad in those times, 50 maybe, whatever, but whatever.
Not today, maybe,
in those times. You're talking about the kind of bricks they made in those days. In fact, some of them, of course, should point out that these kind of bricks would eventually they'd eventually fall apart from the rain. Because they were mud bricks, after all, so eventually the rain would dissolve them. As opposed to when you build with stone, you expect it to last for hundreds of years. Therefore, yes, it needs to be much thicker. The Rashba gives a different answer. He says when you build with bricks, you put mortar between the bricks. When you build with stone, not necessarily. You look at the coastal, for example. The coastal is just made of stones, one on top of the other, with no mortar between them. Therefore, it needs to be built much thicker in order for it to be stable. Because there was no spaces between, right? Yes. Another thing Tosfos points out, when we call this wall between the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim, we call it Traksin. Tosfos deals a little bit with the question, why is it called Traksin? Tosafot gives a few explanations. One of them is that shach means a door, means closing off, and sin, like the word Sinai. So it's the wall that closes off the Kodesh HaKadoshim with the luchos that came to us from Har Sinai. Okay, the question is, fine, that's the first Beis HaMikdash. Okay, first of all, over Nolan to have a... Okay, wait. Yeah. Okay, so the question is now, second line from the bottom, over Mikdash Sheni, my time, over an Amatraxin. Fine. Why is it, by the way, in the second Beis HaMikdash, why did they not make the same wall again, an Amatraxin? Instead of a wall over there, in the second Beis HaMikdash, they had two curtains. Each one was a tefach thick. In between them was a space of four tefachim, and you had the Kohen Gadol, when he went into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, would walk between them, as we learned way back in Yoma. Why did they do that? Why did they have to make that instead of making a wall?
The first one had a wall.
The first one had a wall and a door in the middle of a parosh that's over the door. An amos thick and 30 amos tall. He said, why didn't the second Beis HaMikdash have that? The answer is Kikoi, it's lost in Koi, because a wall is only going to be able to stand when it's only one amma thick, only if it's only up to 30 ammas. Say like Koi, it's not gonna stand. If it's not gonna stand, it's not gonna be stable if it's taller than that. And the second Beis HaMikdash was taller than the first one. When we're no longer have a Gavoya today, we'll see. How do we know that it was taller? Dichtiv, because it was taller. So Rashi says over here the second Beis HaMikdash was 100 ammas tall. Now, the question is, Mephoshim say, you
what's
have
100 amas feet from the up?
From the bottom, from the floor until the top of the roof. Now, if you learn, when you learn Mishnayos Midos, actually what you find is there were two floors to this Mikdash. There were two floors, each one 40 amas tall. Now, on the face of it, the wall we're talking about only went from floor to ceiling, and then there's a ceiling, and then there's another one above it. So, in fact,
so it was what, 30,
so
and 10, 40,
no, so 40, 40 and 40. The remaining 20 was taken up. Right. The remaining 20 was taken up with various other things. You had the Midas, it discusses the details. You had the foundation. You had the space between. You had the ceiling between one floor and the next. You had
the
mic. When we learn Midas in a couple of years, that's a shame. When you learn it every year during the 3 weeks, you learn the details. The point is, for our purposes, what's important is there were 40 amas from the floor to the ceiling of the first. Of the first floor of the Beis HaMikdash, and another 40 from the second from the second floor to its ceiling.
From the ground to the ceiling
was 40, and from the floor of the second, is also 40. So therefore, in fact, Hagoyis Habach changes the girsa over here to say Rashi shouldn't have said 100 amas; he should have said 40, meaning that first floor. However, then it would still mean it's taller than the first Beis HaMikdash, because the first Beis HaMikdash, the first floor, was only 30 amas. On the other hand, other Mefarshim explain that no, the first Beis HaMikdash, when we say it was 30 amas tall, we mean the entire building, except for the ulam. There's a passage in Divrei HaYamim that says the ulam, the front entryway to the Beis HaMikdash, to the first Beis HaMikdash, was 120 amas tall. So one way of looking at it is the whole building was 120 amas, meaning they had a ground floor of 30 and then a second floor of 90. The other way of looking at it is, no, only the entryway, the Yakovet, for example, right, only the entryway in the first Beis HaMikdash was 120. The rest of the building was only 30, as opposed to the second Beis HaMikdash. The ground floor was 40, and then you had a second floor above it. Okay. Anyway.
Who made it much bigger?
What?
Who made the second
Beis HaMikdash? The second Beis HaMikdash, we're going to see. When we're no longer have a Gavoya today, how do we know the second Beis HaMikdash was taller? Dichtiv, because the pasuk says, "Gado yikvod habayis hazeh achron min harishon." The covered of this later house will be greater than that of the first house. And in what way was the covered greater? Rav Shmuel argue on this. Rav Shmuel, the amri lo Rav Yechanan and Rav Elazar. Others say Rav Yechanan and Rav Elazar argue on it. Chab amr b'binyan. One says it was greater in that it was taller, as we just said. B'chadam b'shonim. The other one says the covered of it was greater, that it lasted longer. The first Beis HaMikdash stood 410 years. The second Beis HaMikdash stood 420 years. And the Gemara says, actually, the istilah. As a matter of fact, both things are true. The second Beis HaMikdash was taller, as well as it lasted longer. There's a lot to talk about these couple of lines. One short thing is something that everyone pointed out in a sicha, which the germ of the idea, you can find something vaguely similar in the Maharal, that why should it be? I mean, the second Beis HaMikdash was much lower in Kedusha than the first one. It didn't have the order, it didn't have the higher level of the Shechina, etc. But the vort is, because of that, precisely because of that, especially since in the second Beis HaMikdash, the Aron was hidden underground under the Kodesh HaKadoshim.
Because
it was before the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. It was hidden there, and it wasn't brought back for the second Beis HaMikdash. What it comes down to, that Ebba says, is in the second Beis HaMikdash, you had the inner, the pnimius, of Hashem was connected with the Pnimius of the Jewish people, this hidden part that's not able to be revealed in our world, where there was more of a deeper connection over there. Therefore, in that sense, the second mitzvah was greater than the first. There's a difference, on a different note, Chassam Sofer puts it differently. Precisely because the second mitzvah didn't have the greater level of the Shechina and so forth, therefore the building wasn't so outshone. The first mitzvah, the physical building, was outshone by the Shechina. The second mitzvah, it wasn't. Therefore, the physical building itself had more of a covenant to it, sort of. Okay. Quick thing, by the way, also an interesting thing that relates to the parashiyos that we're in now, Shmoyis of last week and Boy of next week. The Rash, now Pasuk is mentioning over here, Habayis is our Achron. Now, what does Achron mean? On the face of it, Achron means the last one, because that the second verse mitzvah was the last one, Chas and what about the third verse mitzvah? So the Rashba writes in one of his Chuvas that one time he was forced to debate some Galachim, and this is one of the points they brought up. See, what are you Jews expecting the third verse mitzvah? The Pasuk clearly says. He explains to them that sometimes the word Achron in the Pasuk can mean the later one, not the last one, but rather the later one. And he brings them a proof from last week's parasha. Hashem tells Moshe, I'm going to give you some signs. I'm going to give you some oaths and moksim to show in front of the Jewish people your staff turns into a snake, that your hand gets sarah. Then the Eibishter says, if they don't listen to the first simon, they'll listen to the Achron, the subsequent. But then there's a later one. The Eibishter tells them, take some water and pour it on the ground, and it'll turn into blood. So you see, the Achron doesn't mean the last one. And there's an interesting verse that's brought from a couple of different Chassidish Rebbeim that says that expands on this and says there's a pasuk in next week's parasha in Parashas Bo'i that says by the Korban Pesach says v'hoya hadam lachem la'oy, the blood will be for you for a sign. So in context, it means that you put the blood of the Korban Pesach on your doors, and it'll be a sign that the Eibishter won't come and kill your children or makas b'chores. But the verse also goes v'hoya hadam lachem la'oy ala batim, meaning the blood from that third sign of the blood from Parshas Shmos is a simon to you, ala batim, on the houses, meaning on the batei mikdash, that when we say ha'achron, doesn't mean the last one, but it means the second one in a series. The blood, that it's the third one in that series, shows that when we say ha'bayis as ha'achron, doesn't mean the last one, it means the second in a series of three.
The last one.
The second last after the first one, but there will yet be a third one. Yeah. Okay. All right, so the Gemara asks, going back now to this business of the amatraxin, fine. Okay, so we're saying you can't build the wall any taller because then it won't be stable.
30.
30 is the maximum. Right. But now you're tossing Amun Rabinion. So why didn't they in the second verse Mikdash build the wall 30 amas tall between the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim? The Idach never Parochas. And then anything above that, the last 10 amas or whatever, they'll make that as a Parochas.
What's the question? Why didn't do?
Why did they have to make the two Parochas in instead of, why did they have to make the two Parochas in instead of making a wall 30 amas tall, and then above that, to fill in the rest of the space, they'll make a parochas. The answer is, ki koi tlosin am hosan nami, because even when a 30 amas wall, which is only one amas thick, stands, na agav tikru maziva ha'akoi, it'll only stand if on top of it there's a ceiling with plaster and all, which helps stabilize it. V'loi tikru maziva ha'akoi, if you have the top of it is in the air over there without anything above it, it's still, yeah.
It won't stand.
Okay. Well, fine. Still, why don't we say then that let them build whatever they can. Fine. Not 30 amas, 25, 20, whatever, as tall as they can, that will be structurally stable. Let them build that as a building. Then they'll make whatever the rest of it, they'll make a parochas. Amar Abaya. So again, Abaya says, here's Abaya again. Gemiri, no, because we learned the Kabbalah that e kula rabinyan e kula b'parochas. The thing between the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim either has to be all wall or all parochas. It can't be part one and part the other. E kula rabinyan mimikdash. It can either be all wall. We learned that from the Beis Mikdash. E kula b'parochas mimishkan. Or it can all be parochas. We learned that from the Mishkan where they had only a parochas. But you can't mix and match. Which, by the way, Tosfos points out, in that case, it doesn't matter whether a wall will be stable, whether it has a ceiling on top of it or not. Either way, the point is, they're saying you can't build a part wall and part and then part.
It
has to be one or the other.
Why is that?
That's because we no, I don't know what it is, Beruchnius, but I don't know what it is, Beruchnius. There is. There's a sicha where the Rebbe analyzes in detail why. There's a sicha where the Rebbe analyzes why exactly they had to have two parochas in, why they couldn't just have one parochas that's one amma thick. Right. And probably, I didn't have to learn this through the sicha in detail, but probably in the course of that, he probably talks about also the difference between wall and parochas. Mefoshim, by the way, talk about the question, so why don't they just make the wall wider? And the answer is because you can't impinge on make a full wall up to the, from top to bottom, and make it, instead of an amma thick, make it 7 tefachim thick or 8 or whatever it is. The answer is because you can't make, the kodesh has to be full 40 amas long. The kodesh hakodesh has to be full 20 amas long.
Thicker,
if it would be thicker, it would cut into the space of that. And you can't move them over. You can't say, for example, if the hairfall should be a little further over than it was, the footprint of it has to be exact. Now, it is interesting, by the way.
We don't know exactly where it is today.
Because it was all destroyed. It is interesting that L'chi Bona Beis HaMikdash, the third Beis HaMikdash, we'll stop over here, but it is interesting, in the third Beis HaMikdash, it will be a wall again, but in order to avoid in order to avoid this problem, the Pasuk describes the wall will be 2 amas thick. Instead of 1 amma as it was in the first Beis HaMikdash, it'll be 2 amas thick.
It's not going to pinch?
No, that blueprint is said by the Eibishter, just like the blueprint of the first and second Beis HaMikdash. So however it impinges, room will be made. The Eibishter says to do it. As opposed to in the second Beis HaMikdash, they couldn't do that on their own because no instructions were given to do otherwise, and therefore they had to build it.
Where do we know that the Eibishter is
because in Yechezkel, when Yechezkel describes the third Beis HaMikdash, he describes that the wall there was going to be 2 amas thick. So therefore, there you go. Then once it's 2 amas thick, it can be as tall as you need to, and not have a problem with stability.
Well, you cannot go higher than 60 amas.
No, because we said it's not proportional necessarily.
No, not necessarily. Proportional.
Again, the third Beis HaMikdash, again, the Hechel of the third Beis HaMikdash is also going to be 100 amas tall, just like the second one. However, in Yechezkel, he doesn't describe in detail. No, but Yechezkel described it, and he was a Navi, so we know. But he doesn't describe in detail the inner structure of it to say whether it's going to be 2 floors, like the first and second Beis HaMikdash, and if so, how tall each floor is going to be, etc. Presumably, it's going to be similar to the second Beis HaMikdash, like that, a floor of 40 and a floor of 40, with the other 20 amas made up by the various other things between them. But we don't know necessarily. Be that as it may, once it's 2 amas wide, then yes, it can be 40 or 50 or whatever it is, amas tall, without there being a problem, and that's how it'll be.
Who is the Navi going to come to say exactly the location and the proportion?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, much of the description that Yechezkel gives of the Beis HaMikdash is really not that clear what it means. As a matter of fact, when you think about it, Yechezkel said his nevuah during Golos Babel, between the first and second Beis HaMikdash. But when they came to build the second Beis HaMikdash, they didn't build it according to his blueprint. They built it mostly according to the first Beis HaMikdash with a few touches from his nevuah. Why is that? That Amnon says, because the details of what Yechezkel means with his nevuah is not really very clear to us. Therefore, they couldn't follow it. Mephoshim say the deeper idea behind that is the blueprint that Yechezkel is giving is for Beis HaMikdash that's never going to be destroyed. If the Jewish people had been worthy when they came to build the second Beis HaMikdash, that would have been the final one. That's another reason, by the way, why it's called Achron. It could have been the last one if they had been Zoicha. Then they would have understood, the Eibishter would have made them be able to understand Yechezkel's blueprint, and they would have built exactly like that. Because they didn't, therefore they were only able to understand parts of it, and we also are only able to understand parts of it, and therefore they couldn't build fully according to it. When Mashiach comes, it'll be clarified exactly what he meant in every detail. Mashiach or Eliyahu, whoever it is, maybe Yechezkel himself, I don't know, whatever. And then we'll have the exact blueprint that Yechezkel is telling us.